This episode is in memory of Edward Hardwick, who played Dr. John Watson in the Granada television series of Sherlock Holmes with Jeremy Brett. Mr. Hardwick sadly passed away on May 16th after losing his battle with cancer. In memoriam. Hello everyone, this is Curly, and I just wanted to give you sort of a table of contents about what you're going to expect from our very first podcast. First, us Baker Street Babes are going to introduce ourselves. We're going to talk about how we got into Sherlock Holmes, our favorite stories, our favorite characters. And then afterwards, we're going to look at BBC Sherlock's Season 2 titles. We're going to theorize based on what we know of the canon, and then what we know what Moffat and Gatiss are planning, or what we think they may be planning. But make sure you keep listening after we stop chattering, because we have a bunch of news based on what the other actors are doing, both here in London and around the world. We also have a blip about the Undershaw Preservation Day, which was a major success. And please, please listen to it, because it's really, really important. And also be sure to keep listening until the very end to get a sneak peek at our guest for next time. We will be having special guests, so if you want to be on the podcast, by all means, tweet us, Tumblr us, email us, anything. This is our first try, so be kind. But we had a really, really great time recording this, and we hope you enjoy it. Thanks!
They call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street Babes always leave the rest of them behind. So in Scotland Yard they send you home, you feel like you're losing your mind. If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you 2-2-1?
And welcome to the Baker Street Babes podcast, Intelligent Chatter by Totally Bodacious Sherlock Holmes Loving Babes.
Okay, then.
Okay, yeah, so this is our first podcast for Baker Street Babes. Quick shout out to everyone who sort of tumbled, twittered, whatever. I don't actually know the verbs of these words.
Yeah, we can invent them. Those yeah.
Us. Anyone who followed us.
Yes. Thank you so much. It's been quite overwhelming, actually. So I guess we're going to first go off and introduce ourselves so you know who you're listening to, and you can, like, make fun of us then. Okay. So I am Carly. I'm an American, but I live in London currently. Someone else go now.
I'm Kaffers. I live in York at the moment, but I'm hoping to move to London next year.
I'm Artie. I'm a transplanted German.
We're very, very serious here.
Sorry. Okay. Serious business is serious.
Very
carry on.
Very serious, very serious. Right. So obviously, this is a Sherlock Holmes podcast. It is apparently the first of its kind, which I'm actually quite surprised about. But that makes this quite cool. So we're going to go around and say, how did we get into Sherlock Holmes? Who our favorite character is, what our favorite story is, and our favorite adaptation. So, Artie, you're first.
Okay, how did I get into Sherlock Holmes? I first read the Sherlock Holmes stories when I was a kid. I think it was about 10, 11, like in a German translation, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I was in love, basically. And just never look back, really.
Yeah. What was the first story you read?
I can't remember which was the first I read, but probably I read them in order. But I really, really can't remember. But I read the stories in German first when I was a kid, and then when I started picking up English, I read them again in the original English.
So you were born in Germany, yeah? I was, yes. That is cool.
So, like I said, transplanted German.
Yeah, maybe I should listen.
Maybe you should, yeah.
Favorite character, favorite story?
Favorite character is tricky because when it comes to the BBC adaptation, I am, John Watson, hands down, because he's amazing as a character. He's amazing written, and what Martin Freeman did with him is just exceptional. And favourite story is actually probably and has always been Study in Scarlet, because that's where they meet. That's where the big character introduction happens. I like that one a lot. And one that I really, really liked as well is The Man with the Twisted Lip.
Yeah, that is a good one. And your favorite adaptation. I am so good at English. Oh my god.
It is quite late at night.
I have to be mean to the BBC version here a bit, I think, because the version that I love from the bottom of my heart is Joan Brett's Granada series, because that's the one that not grew up on, but that I watched a lot once I found out that it existed. So that is kind of, he just was Sherlock Holmes for me for a long, long time. So he and David Burke and Edward Hardwick, who sadly passed away quite recently, have a special place in my heart, but I don't think you can really compare the modern update at all, because it's just such a different setting.
Yeah, they're very different.
I love the Granada series dearly, yes.
Right, Cathers, same questions.
You might have to remind me.
How did you get into Sherlock Holmes?
Well, I would consider myself to be quite a new fan of Sherlock Holmes, although I've always been kind of like aware of his existence, and also my housemate is like a really big fan of Sherlock Holmes as well. Kind of the first time I really got into it, I don't think a lot of people would count this as getting into Sherlock Holmes really, but like when I was a kid, I absolutely loved the cartoon, Basil the Great Mouse.
Oh my god, yes!
It's amazing. Like I probably watched it like a million times. And it's so good. And like my brother occasionally like sends me the YouTube video of like Ratigan's like evil song. just something we like to do with each other, but that I think was probably my first introduction into kind of, I don't know, that kind of Victorian detective genre. And then obviously in 2009, the Robert Downey Jr. film came out, and me and my friends went to the cinema dressed as Victorian men. Well, I was definitely dressed as a Victorian
Amazing.
Man.
Wow.
That was pretty cool. We went on the bus actually dressed as Victorian men, which is like story of my life really. But nice. That was pretty cool. I was like quite excited about that. I thought it was a really good, I mean, having not read the books at that point, I like really enjoyed it. And I also thought that Jude Law as John Watson was really, I really liked his character actually in that. Mm-hmm. And when I actually came to read the books, I actually kind of imagined kind of Jude Law-ish person as like Watson. But not obviously Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes. It's not quite the Sherlock Holmes that you get in the books.
Not quite.
But then of course rolls around the Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman series, which absolutely blew my mind and is actually what got me to read a lot of the stories. I've started reading The Hound of the Baskervilles in preparation for the new series.
We're the same person, I swear to God.
This happens to me a lot. but I've read pretty much all the short stories now. It's just the larger, like the longer stories that I'm sort of getting around to reading now. I've been really enjoying them, and actually I forgot to mention, before I became a Sherlock Holmes fan, some of my friends got me into one of Arthur Conan Doyle's friends, who was also an author, called Arthur Hornung.
Mm-hmm.
Wrote a book called Raffles and Amateur Cracksmen, which we are pretty sure is meant to be a piss take of Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, I've heard of this. I've heard of Raffles.
It is really amazing. You should definitely read it if you get the chance, because it is just incredible. Like, I think it must have started off as a bit of a joke, but he kind of takes it off, and like the characters kind of come into their own, and it just is incredible.
Yeah, I definitely, it's definitely on the list of things that I want to read.
Oh, no, it is, What you should also put on your list is, as well as the book, in the 70s they made a TV series of it, and that is honestly one of the funniest things I've ever seen. It's so good, and it's so 70s-tastic. apparently it was like the most expensive TV series that was made in that kind of period, and you can kind of tell.
Oh my god.
The sets are really good, but they still have those kind of like 70s collars like on the shirts that they wear, so it's still kind of a little bit dated. but that was like kind of my first introduction into reading like that kind of literature, so I'm kind of quite grateful to Sherlock Holmes fan fiction written in the Victorian period.
Nice. Okay. Your favorite character and favorite story?
I'll start with my favourite story because that one's easier, which is Charles Augustus Milverton. Basically, good because one. I think one. That was written in response to the Raffles novels.
I heard something about that, yeah.
I have a feeling that that is kind of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle being like, well, you know, if your characters can commit crimes, so can mine, ha ha ha. I just really like that story.
Bitch.
It's just the, you know, the way they rolled in the Victorian times. But I think that is kind of his way of, like, I don't know, almost writing like a crossover fan fiction, whatever, whatever you want to call that. But no, I think it's like quite a sweet story, them kind of being like the only time they ever commit a crime, and Watson being like really upset that Holmes has like gone engaged to this girl randomly, like to get into the house. He's like, how could you do that? And he's like, yeah, whatever. Which is like very, very Sherlock Holmes. Our favourite character. I don't know, like, reading the books, I would probably have to say that it's definitely Sherlock that obviously you spend most of your time kind of focused on, but watching the BBC TV series, like, John, it's just amazing, like, Martin Freeman as John.
This is exactly the same thing that happened to me, because when I was reading the books as a kid, it's always like, you know, and because I was an outsider and, you know, but quite a bright kid, I identified with him quite a lot. But now, you know, it's turned me around 180 degrees and I'm Watsonite, yeah. And I'm just amazed.
I know, it's incredible. I don't know how he does it, but
Martin Freeman, what have you done? You know,
what have you done?
I mean, not in a bad way, in a really, really good way.
Yeah, no, I think, and one of my friends said that as well. Like, I lent her the DVD of the series, and like, she came back to me after watching the last episode and was like, "I'm kind of a bit in love with John Watson," and I was like,
"Yes, that's a completely normal response to this series."
Yeah, I think it is. It is kind of a...
Yeah, so she'll even bother asking what your favourite adaptation is.
I think that's obvious. But I'm still kind of got a list of... I definitely want to watch the Granada series. And actually, I've seen the first episode of the Russian TV series. And
God, the Russian one is amazing. If you're a Watsonite.
I didn't know there was a Russian version.
Oh, there is. I actually heard about the Russian one quite a while ago, actually. I think I was talking to someone who was Russian and was a really big Sherlock Holmes fan because of this TV series, and had said, like, definitely watch it. And I was kind of, like, mentally catalogued that. And then, obviously, all the series came out. And I thought, I'll go back and watch that because it's, like, meant to be really good. So I'll give that a chance.
I guess I should answer my own questions now.
Yes,
unless someone wants to ask me, so I'm not interviewing myself.
Curly, how did you get into Sherlock Holmes?
Basil of fucking Baker Street.
Yes, rock on.
I was a kid, because the movie came out in like 1986, and I wasn't born yet, but in 1987. And like, it was like my favorite movie, and I'd watch it over and over again. And I think, one, I really liked it because he was a mouse, and I liked mice. And two, they had accents, and I thought that was really cool. But no, like, The Great Mouse Detective, I just absolutely fell in love with it. And then that was kind of funny, because they actually have, like, audio from the actual, what is it, the Basil Rathbone series.
Yes, Basil Rathbone, Nightshippers.
They actually have a voiceover from him in it, which I thought was cool. I'm like, oh, it's Sherlock Holmes, yada, yada, yada. So yeah, that's how I got into it. And then I didn't read or watch anything until the Robert Downey Jr. film came out, which I really, really enjoyed. And I'd have to agree that Jude Law, absolutely amazing. Like, I loved how he portrayed him. I just loved, like, the bromance. like hardcore bromance.
He knows how to do it. He's very good at that.
In a very platonic
it's completely platonic. Sorry, we have to make fun. It's too easy.
That's perfect timing. So after I watched that, and then I heard about BBC Sherlock that it was happening, and I got really angry because I'm like, how can you modernize it? No, it's Victorian era, and I'm super geeky historian, and I really hate the idea of like modernizing things. So I refused to watch it until like January of this year, because everyone just kept going on and on about like how amazing it was. I'm like, okay. So actually, I watched Hawking first, and I was absolutely floored by Benedict's performance in it. I'm like, okay, he's really good. I'm going to give this a shot. And like after the first episode, I just stared at my computer and immediately clicked on the next one.
Like, you know.
what is this? it's just so fantastic. It's so fantastically written, amazingly acted, and it's still very relevant today, which I think is really good, because I hate like all the crime shows, like CSI this, Law and Order this, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, what I love about The Octane is that it's so true to the books.
Yeah.
I don't quite know how they do that, but it is.
Well, because also, like, if you've like read them as well, and you're watching it, like, oh my god, that's from this book, and this bit is this from this book, and like, yeah, how did they do that?
Yeah,
I started reading them right before I watched it, and then once I was like watching it, I was like, oh, I remember this part. So now I'm reading Hound of Baskervilles to get ready for series two, and like, yep. As I'm like reading it, I'm like, are they gonna do this bit? Are they gonna do this bit? I hope they do this bit.
I've been on a community that does watch-alongs, and I think I've seen every adaptation of Hound of the Baskervilles in existence now.
Oh my god. That's like really well prepared.
The only one that I haven't seen is the Hallmark series one, but I think I've seen pretty much all the other ones in existence, so yeah, it'll be interesting once the BBC one comes out.
Yeah, but we're going to talk about that later, definitely, for sure.
Yes.
Next question. What is it? Right. Do you remember?
Yes. It is, what is your favourite colour? No, that's a good question. Sorry, I threw a bit of Monty Python in there. sorry, I've lost it now. What is your quest?
Where we just giggle the entire time.
Oh god. What is your favorite story? There you go, I managed to get out.
I think probably by the end of it, Hound of the Baskervilles, maybe, because I'm really enjoying it. But as of right now, from ones I've read, I really like The Speckled Band, and I actually like Scandal in Bohemia quite a bit. And I think that's the most popular one because of Adler, but I actually quite like it because it's very, like, mind-gamey, sort of. I know, I liked it.
I haven't read that one yet. I'm going to have to read that. It's on my list.
I love Irene Adler. Can I just say that?
I really like her. And, like, I don't see her as, like, a, you know, I'm going to seduce you.
Not at all. That vibe is just like an intellectual story.
Yeah. Like on a very intellectual level, I think it's quite fun.
I think we're allowed to have differing opinions on these things.
Yes.
Especially because we can't throw anything at each other. Right, next question. Who is your favourite character?
When I was a kid, I loved Basil more than anything. And I think to this day, I still think Sherlock is my favourite character. But like everyone else, I'm slowly being converted to Martin.
Yes, come and join us.
I absolutely adore him, but I also love Benedict's Sherlock. I'm just kind of like, oh god, it's like splitting my heart in twain. But I think Sherlock is slightly above Watson still, but I love them both, and I really like Lestrade. But I like the modern adaptation of Lestrade. I don't like the book Lestrade because he's a little weenie.
Yeah, modern Lestrade is amazing, and it helps that I found a good actor for him, I think.
Sexy. Yeah.
In the book, yeah, I think I was like, oh, when I was reading studying Scarlet, I was just like, why are you so annoying? Why? But then obviously that's kind of a literary device that Bill probably uses to make us think that he's annoying. Any more questions? What was the next question? I can't remember.
Favourite adaptation?
Ah, yes, there we go.
I'd probably say BBC Sherlock. Closely followed by The Great Mouse Detective.
We just have to get that in there.
I cannot stress enough how much I love that movie.
I'm just going to watch it now. So, yeah, I guess on to the new series. We already know the titles of the episodes, and of course Mark Gatiss is a massive tease and likes to give us lots of sort of clues on Twitter as to what he's going to be doing, but let's have some speculation, shall we?
I imagine, because I think this is the way that they said it, that the order will at least be Scandal in Belgravia, they changed it, then Hound of the Baskervilles, then the Reichenbachfall.
Yeah, that is the order they're in, we know that.
Okay, so I guess with number one, Scandal in Belgravia, obviously going to be Scandal in Bohemia. So I guess the big question is, we still don't know who Adler is, and I don't think we will know until it airs.
No, they are very good with keeping stuff like that quiet. Like, they were really, really good with keeping it quiet that Gatiss was playing Mycroft, and even on the DVD he's not on the credits as Mycroft because they wanted people to fall for it.
Oh really? Wow.
So yeah, they can be really good. I usually, when I watch shows that I don't want to be spoiled for, I usually end up being spoiled by the Radio Times. No, they're good with spoiling Doctor Who and stuff like that, and the tabloids are very good with spoiling Doctor Who, but with Sherlock, I think they're very good at keeping stuff quiet if they want it kept quiet.
Oh, well, my housemate spoiled that one for me, unfortunately. Like knew. she, like, told me, and I was like, oh okay.
Yeah, because when he first came on, I swore, I was like, oh my god, it's Moriarty!
It's very good. They do it very well.
It is a very good red herring, but when I watched it the second time round, I was like, oh my god, it's so obvious that he's the British government. It's so obvious. How did I miss that? You know?
The more you know. But yeah, no, back to Scandal in Belgravia. Since I haven't read that particular story, I think I'll leave it to you guys to...
Yeah, I mean, you're the canon guru, Artie.
Am I, no? Well...
Sorry, we're still giggling about Artie.
Well, yeah, I mean, Scandal, I say before, I like Irene Adler as a character, and I quite like the story. I love the Granada adaptation of the story because they really bring it across that she's not a love interest, but she is the one that Sherlock Holmes ends up respecting, you know.
Respect for women, so that's pretty good.
It doesn't have a lot of respect for people.
No. Yeah, in general.
In any kind of adaptation, and even in the original story, so that in itself is quite amazing. She dresses up as a man.
Awesome.
In the original story.
I've
been thinking about this story a lot because I'm quite intrigued as to whether they're going to do something gender-bending with her. I was saying to someone the other day, but that was a really crazy idea that I think, you know, because Sherlock said that women aren't really his area. What if Irene Adler is actually not a woman at all?
That would be amazing.
In the modern adaptation, that would be absolutely amazing, but probably it won't happen. But it will depend, whether the episode is any good or not, I think, for me, will depend on who they cast as Irene Adler. Yeah. You know, whatever gender they go for, probably they are going to go for a woman. And what they make of that character in modern times, because in the original story, she's an adventuress and she's described as being, what's the word, of dubious and questionable memory. She's kind of like not... She's not a baddie. She's not evil. She's, you know, yeah, an adventuress. So, you know, morally / legally grey, shall we say, but not necessarily, you know, a bad person or an evil person. Like Moriarty is clearly just, you know, the evil overlord. But she's not like that. And she is the one who outsmarts him. And in the modern version, Sherlock is really clever. So having someone who just outsmarts him, I don't know, it could be someone like, you know, like Catwoman and Batman.
Okay.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
That kind of relationship, maybe?
No, I'm just imagining Benedict as Batman.
Well, if you've watched the pilot.
Yes.
What have I unleashed?
No, I like that, actually. Like,
yeah, that's sort
of... comparison works.
Yeah, and see, that just got into my head just there. And, yeah, for some reason, it does work rather neatly. Someone who... Who's not an evil person and who is very smart and who is just not like Moriarty is very smart, but he is very clearly on the other side of morality and of Sherlock Holmes. And with Irene Adler, it's not so clear.
I think it would be interesting anyway, like from what you said, I like the idea that, you know, she is his Selina Kyle to his Bruce Wayne. That's like a lovely little nerd moment I'm just going to dwell on for a second there. Yeah, I don't know, because they seem, I like that Stephen Moffat and Mark Gatiss are kind of almost willing to take risks with the way that they write the stories. So I think we can be open to quite a lot of possibilities with how they could decide to like tell this particular one, because they did say it was going to be like a twisted love story.
Yeah, and I think that's what has a lot of people like, I guess, worried. Yeah. But I don't think they should worry about it.
They've already said that like Sherlock. The series is kind of like a love story anyway. So what they define as a twisted love story could be very interesting.
Yeah,
exactly. And that got me thinking maybe they're talking about John's reaction to Irene Adler.
Maybe.
That would be twisted, wouldn't it?
John's reaction to Sherlock being intrigued by a woman.
He's like, oh my God. Just much.
Because in the canon story, Watson... you know, is really amazed that Holmes is so intrigued by this woman. Like, he keeps, I think, in the Granada version, it's a ring. Now, he keeps her photo.
Because yeah, in the Robert Downey Jr. one, there's the photo of her.
Yeah, and the whole story revolves around this incriminating photo that she has of herself and the Duke of Bohemia. Holmes ends up asking the King of Bohemia, like, who offers him a lot of money. He ends up asking him, saying, you have something that I value much, much more than any kind of, you know, jewelry or money that you could give me. And that is this photograph, which in itself is quite amazing. And Watson, you know, is kind of like completely gobsmacked. But I think what's happening, I do not understand. And she was always the woman to Sherlock Holmes, you know, so.
Watch, it's going to be like, a picture for like staged on his BlackBerry.
That would be like, I don't know, kind of more disturbing in a way.
He sits in the corner just looking at it. You're so smart.
Can you imagine, you know, the modern John Watson's reaction to something like that happening?
Completely flabbergasted. Like, he'd be like,
that conversation they had in the restaurant and after what happened with Molly the Moor girl, you know?
Oh, bless.
it could be really interesting, I think.
So the second one, Hound of the Baskervilles, which is the one that they are filming right now, and that we have gotten apparently a pic of the set from, except it just looks like a nuclear power plant.
No, I thought it looked like a prison, actually. Like,
yes.
Yeah, that's the other three, yeah.
Yeah.
Could be interesting. Well, I like that, because, like I was saying before, like, they're kind of willing to take risks with the stories, so, like, the way they tell it could be, like, completely bizarre and, like, really tenuously related to the story of the Hound of the Baskervilles, or it could be, you know, just Mark Gatiss, like, trolling everybody on Twitter. Which is quite likely. what do we think about the story? I've only just started reading Hound of the Baskervilles.
Yeah, I'm only about halfway through. So, but I do hope that it is mainly John-centric, because, you know, Sherlock's off doing his own little thing. So I think it'll be good for, especially for Martin to have, like, sort of like an episode that's almost all to himself.
Yeah, Hound of the Baskervilles is really odd, because it gets adapted really often, but you don't see them as a team in that story that much because they get split up for long chunks of it.
So that like makes a difference to the story actually. Well, it could be quite interesting as well because obviously like in the last series you saw them kind of have a bit of an altercation about Sherlock's behaviour. So I don't know if they'll maybe use that kind of, I don't know, maybe have they'll have a strop with each other.
Mark Gatiss and Stephen Moffat have said that, you know, their relationship, the friendship between John and Sherlock is what they wanted to go back to. And, you know, now that they've had these three cases together, their relationship obviously has changed from what it was like when they first met, and they have to get that in there.
Yeah, I mean, I like that, actually. I think that's probably one of my favourite elements of the adaptation. Because obviously that's what they were going for, really. But, like, it just is... It's kind of what keeps you watching, like...
definitely.
What's I quite like about watching BBC TV series as well, because you do see that kind of... the development of the characters, and they do change as time goes on. You know, there's acceptance that the characters have to develop in some way, and I think... that will never go back to the way that it was before, which I quite like that idea. So it would be good to see how the dynamic has developed.
Yeah, and at the back of this could be, like you say, Curly could be really interesting for that because it does split them up. And, well, it's not mainly John-centric as a story, but a large chunk of it is.
Well, I'm only halfway through.
I've literally only read the beginning of it. So.
And again, you know, to obviously... do the big flourish at the end. But Watson is on his own an awful lot in this story.
Yeah, I mean, there are, I know, a couple of stories that are actually told from the perspective of Sherlock, which I'd be quite interested to see doing a bit sort of from his perspective as well as just like from John kind of being the normal person looking into Sherlock's weird little world.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they'll adapt any other sort of stories into those two that we've already discussed. That could be interesting, actually.
I could be quite like to meld a few stories, like put like little bits from other ones into.
Yeah, they'll make references.
They do that all the time, anyway.
Yeah.
What do we think of this picture of the set, though?
I think he just liked the sunset.
Well, I don't know. See, because it could be any number of things. I mean. I quite like that Mark Gatiss is writing the obviously like horror centric episode.
Yes.
This is what his speciality is. so I don't know, like it's almost endless because we already know the way that they adapted kind of the first three. They just took it in a direction that I don't think I ever would have considered. Like it's like we could speculate, you know, until we're blue in the face, but we might never actually
wrong.
Like what it is they're gonna do.
Yeah, but what they do very well is boil it down to the essentials. And, you know, that's what you have in hand is kind of like the logic versus the belief in superstitions and in supernatural. Because you have this legend of the hound and Holmes obviously comes in and goes like, what is this? There is no such thing as supernatural beings. There has to be, you know, a logical explanation to all this. And obviously he's right in the end. So that's an element that they...
kind
to
of
keep from that story.
Well, it's kind of fascinating because Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was like a massive spiritualist.
Yeah, but only later in life, not when he was writing the Hound.
True. But I like thought that was really interesting. Like he seems to have changed his tone a bit and gone the flip side. I just thought that was a weird little anecdote I thought I'd add there. Yeah, no, I like it. It'll be interesting, especially like if they choose to go through that kind of something supernatural is happening route, and Sherlock is like, lol, no. And then has to like prove it. that's like the bare bones of the story, isn't it?
Yeah, and also you have, well, Baskerville Hall, you know, the big posh English manor house.
Where I live.
Setting, you know?
Yeah, that'll be interesting whether they choose to challenge that perception of the story. Maybe the prison. We don't know. Mark Gatiss, why are you such a troll? Oh, God.
To the last one. Yeah, like, obviously we have the final problem, which I haven't read, but everyone knows what happens. And if you don't, read, like, Wikipedia. Come on, people.
Well, yeah, no, I think it's really interesting how they chose, like, obviously they're going for this kind of theme at the end of every series.
Tear your heart out, make you worry, like, hell for a year.
And now you must wait, for the next series, ha ha ha. Yeah, I don't know, whether the thing is, like, it seems to be, like, a lot of this series might not be set, like, in England, which could be quite interesting, because obviously the first series, apart from the short trip to Minsk, everything was kind of centered, like, solely in London, whereas this series seems to be sort of branching out into other places, which is
Scandal and Belgravia should be in London.
Yeah, that's London, yeah.
Because it would be the Belgravia Hotel, I think, that's the general. And then with the final problem, Reichenbach fall, people are thinking, like, what are they going to do Reichenbach in London? Like, are they going to use the London Eye? Are they going to use, like an office
flood barrier?
Flood barrier, yeah. Or are they going to actually bring it to Switzerland? So I don't know. I think it would be cool if they did something in London, personally.
I've not heard any of that speculation, so I think that's quite interesting.
Yeah,
I don't think I would ever be able to go on the London Eye again if they did something. Like,
no, I'm terrified of Ferris wheels, which is why I think the London Eye would be really scary. But I also, like, maybe if it was an office building, like it was Reichenbach Industries or something.
Yeah, something like that. Something like that with, you know, like what they do with Chad Sanderson and Tower 42.
Mm-hmm. Because that would be a terrible fall, falling off a skyscraper.
Oh dear. Yeah, I have to make a confession about this episode, because the confession is it's absolutely doing my head in. Doing my head in and my heart to boot, because the first series, the entire timeline of the first series is taken from Final Problem. They took the setup of Final Problem for the final 10 minutes of The Great Game. They quote from Final Problem verbatim, exchange. Yeah. And even the fingering loaded firearms in your pockets, the everything I could say has already crossed your mind, then I guess my answer has crossed yours. That's lines from Final Problem, and they say on the commentary that that is where that all came from. And now they're doing an episode that's called The Reichenbach Fall. I'm like, how do these two things fit together? I really cannot.
Everyone thought that the pool was going to be Reichenbach, but then we get the order of the episodes, and it's not, so.
I guess maybe a lot of it's to do with the uncertainty of whether they would actually get to do a second series, and now they're kind of like, okay, now we have to do, like, the final problem, like, properly, not just in, like, the last 10 minutes.
That's kind of what...
Yeah, no, I can understand
that. What does my head in slightly, and also the key element of the final problem is Holmes, you know... dies, Watson is left behind,
and it's gonna be like so heartbreaking.
Massive crisis, because Martin Freeman has the potential to really, really sell that. I mean, there's the Victorian Russian adaptation with Watson reading a letter and a tear falling on it and just absolutely crying his heart out at this waterfall, and every time I watch it, I'm just lost. And I think Martin Freeman has the potential to do similar things to me.
I think it could be, potentially, it could be absolutely amazing, but also, like, everybody will be like, oh my god, and never speak to the, you know, any of them again. Not that we do anyway, but, you know, the sentiment is there. So I think we're in for an interesting... couple of months coming up as the speculation machine goes into action.
Like a horrible, like, gut-wrenching couple of months.
Yeah.
Refreshing Twitter constantly.
Incidentally, I will actually be in China when it airs, which is really depressing.
Oh, no!
So I'm relying on you guys to send me downloads so I can keep up. I'm also going to miss Merlin as well. And Doctor Who. My life's over.
What do you make of the speculation that they're going to start storytelling with a flashback?
Of, like, what happened at the end of The Great Game.
Yeah, because obviously that is a massive cliffhanger. these two guys are very good with, you know, stuff that they've done on Doctor Who, just going like, and then 3 years later, this happened.
Yeah.
And oh, you don't know what happened, you know, in the 3 years in between where we left off and where they pick up.
Yeah, they better resolve that shit.
Yeah, the curly sentiments, exactly. I don't know, it's one of those things where you think they could be really annoying and, like, they won't really, like, show it to our satisfaction, or it could be, like, really heart-wrenching, or, like, or Mycroft will just stroll in and be like, oh, ho, 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 no, you don't!
Yeah, Mycroft and Lestrade with codes billowing, saving the day. That is kind of, yeah.
Sherlock, like, never speaks to them again, ever.
And Moriarty just, like, skips away. Okay, bye!
Yeah, or there was speculation to that effect after that chat that Cumberbatch did, because he was asked, what is Sherlock going to say to his brother or something like that? And his answer was, what took you so long? So everyone was kind of like going, oh my God, what's going on here?
Yeah, I think Mycroft is going to come in and save them, I think.
Yeah.
I have that. That's my theory anyway. I've had that theory for quite a while. I'm still clinging to it. Just because I like it, Mycroft to come in and be like, ha, 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 ha.
Deus ex Mycroft, yes.
Okay, well, we should probably wrap this up.
Well, this is the Baker Street Babes signing off for the evening. I hope you all enjoyed our first lovely podcast, and please join us again.
Yes, our guest for next time will be Caitlin, who does the most amazing songs ever on YouTube. So she's actually joining us for the podcast, so that'll be really fantastic, and I'll play one after this all finishes on the podcast so you can listen to the absolute amazingness that is, like, Purple Shirt. But first, exciting, awesome, amazing news. I'm absolutely delighted to say that Sherlock won the Best Drama BAFTA and Martin Freeman won a very much deserved Best Supporting Actor BAFTA at the BAFTA Television Awards on May 22nd. Sadly, Benedict didn't win Best Actor, and by some black voodoo magic, The Only Way is Essex beat Sherlock to the YouTube Audience Award. What can I say? People love trashed telly, alas. However, Martin Freeman's bitch face of a reaction is now famous, so we win anyways. Also, while it has yet to be confirmed by Peter Jackson, Martin let slip backstage at the BAFTAs that Benedict is joining the cast of The Hobbit. He won't say what role, but the general rumor consensus is that he'll be voicing Smaug, a role that he's always wanted to do. It's being reported in a ton of newspapers, both online and off, also on the BBC, so it seems to be legit, but we're still waiting for it to be confirmed by Peter Jackson.
This is news time, and that, my friends, is the extent of my ukulele skills. Olé! This is the place where I give you updates about what the actors, composers, and writers, and everyone involved in the show have been up to. Martin Freeman has been in New Zealand for the past few months and will go back at the end of the summer working on the prequel to the Lord of the Rings trilogy, The Hobbit, directed by Peter Jackson. There is a possible release date for the film on December the 12th of 2012, but it has yet to be confirmed, so I shall get back to you on that. Before that, Freeman had been working on another project, a feature film called Swinging with the Finkels, directed by Johnny Newman. It's a rom-com also featuring Mandy Moore, and it tells the story of a couple trying to revive their sex life. I saw the trailer for the film the other day at the cinema, and I have to say I had a pretty good laugh about it, so I'm hoping it's going to be good fun. The movie is out in the UK on the 17th of June for a 200 screens release. Freeman has also been announced as one of the voice actors for the next stop-motion films at Aardman Animation, entitled The Pirates. He joins a pretty impressive cast that also includes David Tennant, Imelda Staunton, Russell Tovey, and many more. Moving on to Andrew Scott, who was last seen on stage at the All Vic in one of my favourite plays, Designed for Living. He was truly fantastic and very funny, so you can imagine how excited I was to find out that Scott was coming back on stage this summer at the National Theatre in Emperor and Galilean. This is the first adaptation in English of this play by Norwegian playwright Ibsen. The things we know about this production so far are quite impressive. It will be 4.5 hours long, and 50 actors will be on stage at the Olivier Theatre. Scott will be on stage along another fantastic actor as well, Ian McDiarmid. The play will begin the preview shows on the 9th of June, and I will report on that first night in my next podcast. Louise Brealey, who plays Molly on the show, will be soon at the Young Vic Theatre in The Government Inspector from the 3rd of June. David Arnold, one of the composers of the music of Sherlock, will start working on the music for the Olympic Games as part of a project with Danny Boyle. And finally, for French fans, bonne nouvelle, Stephen Moffat has been announced as the guest of honour at the French Comic Con, which will take place from June the 30th to July the 3rd in Paris at the Parc des Expositions Paris-Nord-Villepinte.
Right, I'm going to talk for a little bit about Third Star. Third Star is an independent film which just opened in the UK. It was directed by Hattie Dalton and it's starring Benedict Cumberbatch, JJ Field, Adam Robertson and Tom Burke. The central character of the film is James, who is played by Benedict Cumberbatch, who is terminally ill with cancer, and his three closest friends invite him on a camping trip to his favourite place on Earth, which is Barafundle Bay, the wonderful Barafundle Bay in Wales. So they go on this trip, and of course they have to, the three friends have to come to terms with the fact that a person that they love and care about very much is dying, but also they have to face things that aren't going well in their own lives. I saw it on the opening weekend on the Saturday, and as far as I'm concerned, everyone should go see it because it's beautiful and heartbreaking. JJ Field and Benedict Cumberbatch in particular are absolutely stunning, stunning performances. Beautifully shot, and the landscape is just amazing. It's worth seeing for that alone, really, for the gorgeous shots of the Welsh countryside. So I'm going to tell you now where you can actually go and see it, which is, if you're in the UK, the Empire Leicester Square in London is showing it, and we've just heard from the Third Star Twitter that the film is staying in there by popular demand, so it did really well on the opening weekend, obviously. I'm glad that it's staying, so hopefully it'll get a wider release. It's also showing at the Chopped Art Centre in Cardiff, the Polly in Falmouth, Warwick Art Centre and Aberystwyth Art Centre. The last three locations also have Q&As with the producer Vaughan Sybil and a member of the cast. Go and check the website for more info. The address is thirdstarfilm.com. Other locations where you can see it are the Watermans in Brentford, Quad Cinema in Derby, Theatre Merlin in Cardigan, Torch Theatre in Milford Haven, Phoenix Square Leicester, Theatre Go on Fishguard, Northern Farm Arts Centre in Maidenhead, and the Robert Burns Centre Film Theatre in Dumfries in Scotland. It's also currently playing at the Seattle Film Festival in the US, and it will be playing at the Sydney Film Festival in Australia, which is from June 8 to 19. There are some US screenings confirmed currently for New York for the IFC Centre on June 20 and the Walter Reed Theatre on June 25. More US cities are to be confirmed, so please go check the website for more info. Or you can also check on Facebook, Third Star, and on Twitter. The social media team have a Twitter account at This Is Third Star, and they're really, really nice. They've been chatting to people all the time. They've been retweeting people who are looking for buddies to go see the film with, as what's quite sweet. They've also taken people's tweets about the film and put them on little posters on Facebook and on the website, which I thought was really sweet. So yeah, Western Edge Pictures, almost forgot about this. Western Edge Pictures, the independent company behind the film, are having a competition on Facebook because it is a film about people going on a trip. And because it's such a limited release, people are actually going on trips to go see it. So if you are going on a trip to go see this film, you should document it in some kind of fashion. Make a video diary, take pictures, make a little travel journal, anything you can think of, and then submit it to them. The details are on their Facebook page, Western Edge Pictures Facebook page. And you can win some wonderful stuff. The entries are going to be judged by the cast. And even if you don't win anything, I think it's a really nice thing to do and could be really fun, especially if you're going on an epic trip. Myself, I only had 1 hour on a train, so not too exciting, but there are people who are going on hour-long drives to get to a cinema which is showing this film, which in itself is quite amazing, I find. So yeah, that's it about Third Star. Please go see it, go support this film. It's
It's amazing and it deserves to be seen by everybody.
Many of the Baker Street Babes are part of a special organisation known as the Undershaw Preservation Trust, which represents the country home of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle in Hindhead, Surrey. Sadly, the home, a beautiful example of late Victorian architecture, which Mr. Doyle had a hand in designing himself, has come under threat from redevelopment. It is the aim of the UPD to stop this from happening so that the house can be preserved as a single dwelling, hopefully with the aim of restoring it and opening it to the public in future. The house was built in 1897 for Mr. Doyle and his family to move out of London and into the country. His first wife, Louise, suffered from tuberculosis, and the hope was that the more natural Surrey air and the beautiful views would improve upon her health. The move did seem to add a few more years to her life, but she did eventually die in the house in 1906. During his stay at Undershaw, Conan Doyle wrote The Hound of the Baskervilles and The Return of Sherlock Holmes. He also entertained many notable guests and fellow writers, including Arthur Hornung, Bram Stoker, the author of Dracula, J.M. Berry, the author of Peter Pan, and a young Virginia Woolf. Many modern writers and celebrities also support the cause, including Mark Gatiss, who is the patron of the Trust. If you would like to know more about the house and what the Trust is aiming to achieve, you can visit the website on www.saveundershaw.com. You can also join the Facebook page and follow them on Twitter, such as the marvels of modern technology. Saturday the 14th of May was Undershaw Preservation Day, an attempt by the Trust to raise awareness of the cause for the upcoming judicial review. Lynn Gale, co-founder of the Trust with John Gibson, invited many of us down to Hindhead to join in the campaign. The day was chosen because it was the grand walkthrough of the new Hindhead A3 tunnel. Myself and the other reps gave out some rather fantastic deerstalker hats so that the walkers could show their support as they passed through the tunnel. As reps, we made the decision to leap aboard the buses as they arrived, to pick up the walkers from the car park, and gave out the hats to anyone who was interested. This proved very effective, as we had entire buses filled with deerstalkers, but they were so in demand at one point the bus almost drove away with us still on it. Overall, the day was pretty successful. Almost all the hundreds of hats were worn, and many of the walkers were interviewed by the press about the cause. Again, if you're interested in finding out more, please visit the website on www.saveundershaw.com.
And now a word to our German fans.
I'm Ardi, I'm a transplanted German, so hallo an alle Deutschen, die zuhören. Ich weiß nicht, was es ist mit Deutschland. Also jedes Land auf dem Planeten hat jetzt ja Sherlock gesehen. Und die Deutschen sind irgendwie immer noch nicht so weit. Das kommt jetzt, also die erste Staffel wird in Deutschland ausgestrahlt, wenn wir hier in England die zweite haben. Kann es wirklich so lange dauern, was zu synchronisieren? Was ist da los bei euch? Sag mir das doch mal einer. This quotidian world has got you crying, won't you two to one be mine? There's a question that plagues me. Late at night it awakens me. If Sherlock is such a pragmatist, then why can't he buy a shirt that fits? Oh, purple shirt, you're so tight it hurts. You're an eggplant straitjacket, and boy, that ain't the half of it. There's a case of abduction that's arisen. Got the world's best detective locked in your silky prison purple shirt. And it's not just you, there are others. What is it about that man that he can't be properly covered? I know that he's dealing. Keeping properly clothed is
purple shirt, you're so tight it hurts. You're an eggplant straitjacket, and boy, that ain't the half of it. There's a case of abduction that's arisen. You've got the world's best detective locked in your silky prison purple shirt. Purple shirt. Doesn't look half bad with those buttons straining, but I'm just saying, if he's married to his work, he should think of not displaying so much. Purple shirt, you're so tight it hurts. You're an eggplant straitjacket, and boy, that ain't the half of it. There's a case of abduction that's arisen. You've got the world's best detective locked in your silky prison purple shirt. Purple shirt. So maybe take a break when Holmes puts his clothes on. 'Cause I have always wondered how you would look on John. Oh, purple shirt, you're so tight it hurts. You're an eggplant straitjacket, and boy, that ain't the half of it. There's a case of abduction that's arisen. You're getting too wumpy, locked inside your silky prison purple shirt. Purple shirt. There's a question that plagues me. I see you, purple shirt, and God save me.